better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, for those anytime easy drinking occasions.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team that's on the way back, a College World Series title, the Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
It's $4,800 in free groceries, and we're going to give away a $500 gift card to Buffalo Wild Wings to one lucky listener this Thursday. Get all the complete details and all the rules online, hitthatline.com. Again, now through Wednesday, July the 8th, win free groceries for a year from Buffalo Wild Wings, ESPN Arkansas, and hitthatline.com.
So if you look back at history as far as recruiting goes, there was, and we talked about this, I think, for a second or two. I think there was a point in time, Tommy, where you had Frank Broyles, Eddie Sutton, and Norm DeBrien all up there coaching. And it was a very short stretch.
At the very end of Broyles, very beginning of Eddie Sutton.
That trio, as far as recruiting says, we're not talking about just a coaching overall. We're not talking about where the programs are. We're talking about just the recruiting aspect. That's, I think, pretty hard to beat. I don't know if you're going to be able to top that.
Because right after that, you obviously had Lou Holtz, Eddie Sutton, Norm DeBrien.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason Lou Holtz didn't stretch his career out a little further at Arkansas is the recruiting aspect.
Exactly.
He couldn't recruit, particularly in Little Rock. So recruiting was the Achilles heel for him at Arkansas. So from your perspective on this conversation, that might be as good as it gets. So you think when Nolan was here, he had some great recruiting classes. Football, you had, I guess, the tail end of Ken Hatfield, Jack Crow, Joe Kynes, and then Danny Ford, and I guess Houston Nutt. Maybe when you think about Houston, you had Houston Nutt, Nolan Richardson, Norm DeBrien.
And the question, here's the question I have.
That would have been a pretty good era too right there.
Nutt was known as a really good recruiter, like, to kids. They really wanted to play for him. But the interesting aspect about Nutt, Tommy, is he didn't have, like, the recruiting classes weren't that high. He got diamonds in the rough and like, people like that. It wasn't like one of those things, Tommy, where
he didn't have top 10 classes.
Exactly.
There. Other than the, when they had the Springdale 5
come. Yes, out. and that class was
six, whatever you want to call it.
I'm trying to think what that class was ranked. I still think the highest in the recruiting era was still Bobby Petrino's class. I don't think that Springdale 5 top. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think that's correct. So even then, like, and that's like the whole debate about recruiting, Tommy, is it about the players that you bring in as far as they're rated, or it's about what they do on the field. Now, Houston Nutt, again, was so good at plucking out players. Perfect example, we're going to get to talk to Tony Bua, former Arkansas Razorback, tomorrow at 8 a.m. He was a guy that wasn't as recruited. If you listen to Hog Pod, he talked about how Mack Brown, Texas head coach at the time, told him that he wasn't good enough to play at Texas, and then he went and had a really successful career at Arkansas. So Houston had this just uncanny ability, Tommy, about projecting kids, which is hard. Like, that's hard sometimes when you, like,
well, I mean, look at Jamal Anderson. There's a guy that was a wide receiver.
Oh, we talk about him all the time.
Where was it? Little Rock Parkview, I believe, he played.
Yep.
And he became a top draft pick at defensive end in his time at Arkansas. I mean,
like, what stories do you hear about a kid that played wide receiver, 6'5", just
skinny, and then they put the weight on him and turned him into a great defensive end.
And it looked like he just really bought in, which, again, is sometimes hard to do. You think about the majority, Tommy, of kids want to play on offense, right? That's the more decorated, it's more looked at, the Heisman Trophy. A defensive player hadn't won the Heisman Trophy since, what, Charles Woodson in 97?
Right. Yeah.
I think that's correct. So, I mean, that just goes to show you that more people pay attention to the offensive side of the ball rather than the defense. I think Tyrann Mathieu should have won the Heisman Trophy that year in 2011. He didn't, but it's just more looked at. It's more celebrated, regardless if it's fair or not. That's how it is. So for Houston, was Reggie Herring the DC?
He was one of his DCs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember.
He was in that 06 era there.
Okay, so that's surprising to me, and I think it's pretty cool to convince a kid to play again. Like, what's going to get more attention paid to, Tommy, playing wide receiver or playing defensive end? It's wide receiver.
Back to where you started the conversation, though, that in 75 or so, you had Norm DeBrien in baseball, Eddie Sutton, and Frank Broyles. Now, you go back a little further with Broyles and the reputation he built for recruiting. A lot of that was built in a day where they'd have 150 kids or more out on the field, and the scholarship limitations and the rules then just don't even compare to today's recruiting. So was Broyles an excellent recruiter? Was his record speaks for itself of all the domination that that this program had in the 60s particularly. And early 70s to that point, but it was at its best in the 60s when Broyles was at the helm.
I would be fascinated to know, Tommy, what their recruiting rankings look like, because recruiting is either late 90s, early 2000s when it kind of took off. Recruiting coverage. So my good friend in Nashville, Bill Keene, who comes on Halftime on Wednesdays, he was really the originator of recruiting. He used to do this thing, Tommy, where he would have a call-in line. And he made a boatload of money off this. He'd have all these different football connections because there wasn't Rivals. There wasn't 24/7. There wasn't Scout. So there was very few recruiting outlets out there. And he really based his original college football radio show on recruiting talk. Do the call-ins and get a boatload of money because it just really sprouted out. But the question I want to go back to is, I wonder if you go back in those 60s and 70 years when Arkansas was really one of the blue bloods of college football, what those recruiting classes would have been ranked. I'm assuming they probably would have just off the top of my head, and again, I have no basis for this, but top 10 would seem like that's not a stretch to say that.
It's a good question. I don't know how you'd go back and equate it at this point because no one would have tape or to be able to evaluate that many kids on the high school level. But Arkansas, I can say this, Texas high school football was probably, as it is today, one of the best in the country. It was the best maybe back then, the most developed high school football state in the country, and Arkansas was recruiting well. I mean, a lot of the great players from that era came from Texas. So I would guess your hunch would be correct that you were one of the better recruiting programs in the country had those rankings taken place in the Broyles era.
877-377-6963 is the number to call or text in. Let's go to the phone lines and welcome in Mrs. Lisa in Northeast Arkansas. Miss Lisa, you're on the Morning Rush.
I listen when you can't remember if Wabash or Wabash, friends of the Wabash Cannonball.
That's right.
Okay. And Kansas State's not going to play this year. You know, they've all said they're not going to play as a team, which I don't even want to go there this morning. But anyway, let me say this about recruiting. Not quick. Tony Bua, I believe, came out of Louisiana. Am I correct?
I think Texas. Do we lose her? Rats. Miss Lisa, if you want to
call us back, Miss Lisa.
You want to call us back? We just saw it. No, you're good, man. Don't worry about it. You want to call us back? I think he's out of Texas. I'm not 100%. I'll look that up real quick, but I believe he's out of Texas. And again, Tony wasn't this like highly recruited, just everyone one of them, but he turned into a heck of a football player. I mean, New Orleans, Louisiana, but I think he went to Texas at one point. I feel like that I'm not wrong on that, but it says John Curtis was his high school out of New Orleans. So, Miss Lisa, you're right. I'm trying to remember with that, but I mean that's just a perfect example, y'all, of just someone that you were able to get. There has to be those, Tommy. As a coach, you can't, like, it's very important that you get a four-star, or if you can get a five-star, which I don't know when Arkansas is going to get their next five-star, hopefully sooner than later. Yeah. But it's also just the recruiting side of things. You have to be able to, again, like we're talking about, project and get those kids as well. Yeah. Let's bring it back in, Miss Lisa. Miss Lisa, sorry about that. You go ahead and finish.
Okay, I'm sorry. Well, listen, right quick. Houston, that could recruit, and then we went into this age, in my opinion, because I'm old enough to remember it. Well, that's when the astronomical amounts that would pay coaches come in, and Arkansas has been through 10, 15 years of it, of paying overrated, stupid coaches with tremendous buyouts. And I'm going to get off of that because I don't want to ruin my holiday weekend. But talking about college football, I'm supposed to go to Notre Dame this year. And I hate Notre Dame, but I've always wanted to go there, you know? And now that I'm getting to go, I'm at the point in life where I can go, I'm not going to get to go because I don't think we're going to have college football. And I hate to put it out there. I know y'all don't want to talk about it, and a lot of people don't want to hear about it. Yeah. But I read yesterday when the Pac-12 doesn't think they're going to play football. They're going to make a decision in the next few days, if I read that correctly. Did you read that, Tommy?
I think they're going to make a decision sometime in July about when they'll start the season. I differ a little bit from your opinion. I think there will be college football. Now, when it will start, how many games you'll play, when those games will be played, I think that's what's up for debate. But I think college football will happen because there's too much money lost if it doesn't happen. So I think that it will. Will it be September 5th? I got a lot of questions about that. But I think they're going to play, may not play 12 games. But I think college football will happen at some point. It may straddle the break in the year. You may see regular season games played in January. But, Lisa, I think they're going to get it in because it's just too financially important to too many people.
Well, I agree with that point, and that's what everybody keeps telling me. Lisa, it's too important. There's too much money, and I've heard all of that. But then you turn on the TV and you've got our governor standing there with a football in one hand, the mask in the other. And I'm not wearing no dang mask. I mean, I'm not wearing a dang mask. I'm not. And they can't make me.
And
I'm not wearing one. I mean, you go to Walmart.
Hang on. What if the city council in Light, Arkansas passes this ordinance and requires you to wear it? What are you going to do then?
I'm president of the city council out here. We don't wear masks. We farm.
I should have known you were on the city council. So,
you know that old saying, I guess I can say this on the radio. I'm mad as hell and I ain't going to take it anymore. That's just about to where the point I'm at. And I'm particular. I tell you what's going to happen, then I'll get off there. I know y'all are ready for me to move on. Come the first Tuesday in November, this all is going to mysteriously disappear. Mark my words. Go to Vegas and put it all on red. Come the first Tuesday in November, all this is going to go away. We're all going to look at one another and we're going to say, well, what happened? There's no more news. Hey, I mean, it's just going to be a miracle. And if anybody out there sees this any other way, you can call in and rebuke me. But I think I'm right on this. But anyway, I love your show. Thank you for taking my call.
What if we got some of these masks that had the Morning Rush logo on it? Would you wear one of those, Miss Lisa?
Yes, I would. You mail it to me. All right, I'll give you my address over the telephone.
Deal.
We'll get you a mask with a Morning Rush logo on it. That'll be your mask.
Let me tell you what I'm going to do. I'm not going to wear the darn sock. Well, I may wear the church. I'll pay the organ at church. So I may wear the church and set up there with that on my face just to help it be that, you know, I like them. No, I'm serious. I'm serious about this. But I'll take it with me to the football games, baseball, basketball, and get all the coaches to sign it.
There you go.
That's what I do.
Yeah.
But yeah, do y'all really have masks?
No, but that's a good idea that we just came up with here.
Yeah.
Maybe we should.
Yeah, and I'll get it signed. I'll get with Sam Pittman. I'll get with Eric Musselman. And I want to get something else I got to say before I get it off. I'm sorry. And Dave Van Horn. I watched the Eddie Sutton deal, and I know y'all talked about it, but that made me feel so much better about him. But wasn't that a good infomercial for the University of Arkansas? And guess who was smiling the biggest watching it? Eric Musselman. Because that was free pub for us.
That's a good point.
That's a great point. Miss Lisa, appreciate the call. I actually asked Musselman. Sorry, go ahead. What'd you say?
I said, in other words, get off the phone.
No, I was just going to talk about Eric Mossman. You're good. Thanks for calling in, Mrs. Lisa.
Bye.
Always good to hear from her.
We're never cutting you off, Lisa.
We're
too afraid.
I don't want to get yelled at. On the note of Mrs. Lisa talking about Eric Mossman and just his thoughts in the Eddie Sutton documentary, I asked him about that on the Zoom call, and he watched it with him, Mrs. Danielle, Mariah, and Michael. They watched that, so it seemed like that he was pretty fond of it. And I also tagged that along with, well, do you, because it's, you know, some, like, you and I, obviously, as sports radio hosts, we have to have a historical context of what's happened in the history of Arkansas sports. You're older, so you have more of a knowledge. Clay's older than us, so he has even more of a knowledge. He's been doing this longer. But I try and do my best, whether it's reading, whether it's watching old games, whatever, try to just pick up as much as I can. And when you recruit, Tommy, and this kind of ties back into the recruiting conversation, you sometimes can't go back too far in history. Like, there's probably plenty of Arkansas kids that have no idea who the big, like, who Marvin Delph or Sidney Moncrief or
Eddie Sutton. And they don't even remember Eddie Sutton from Oklahoma State.
The triplets. So that's like, it's sometimes hard because what he said is, how he responded to it is like, you don't want to go back too far in the history because some kids, they don't know.
No, but that's why it's history. I mean, I don't go back to the Revolutionary War, but we've read about it, right? We know about it. Mm-hmm. So just because it happened before you were born doesn't give you a free pass not to have knowledge of it, whether it's sports history or just history, right? So it is the beginning chapters of not Arkansas basketball, but I mean, you got to go back to the 40s before Arkansas had any semblance of success in basketball prior to Eddie Sutton's arrival. The program was dead. I mean, it was in the coroner's office. And Frank Broyles had the ability and the vision to see what it could be. And he knew hiring Eddie Sutton was a coach of that caliber was going to be what it would take as the AD. Because remember, he became AD 71 or 2, I think, when he took over for Coach Barnhill, somewhere early 70s. I believe I'm right on that. And then as he retired from being the head coach in football and just focused exclusively on being the AD, he knew that financially it's important to get all the sports making money or at least paying their own bills, that football couldn't support them all if you were going to grow. So he knew a coach like Eddie Sutton, who, by the way, was hired for a whopping $25,000 a year.
That was his salary?
One of the top contracts in the country at $25,000 a year when he came in 45 years ago. So he knew that he had to make the investment. That was a lot of money back then to build the program, and it paid off.
Well, if I'm an Arkansas kid, I'm growing up, and I'm potentially going to have some success at the college level playing basketball, and I'm with my parents, I'm with my uncle, I'm with my friends, and I'm watching this documentary. Like, you as an Arkansas kid that's like debating on whether to be a Razorback or not, I think it's important to know about that history. And again, you kind of juxtapose like the idea of not going too far back with some of these kids because they just won't know what you're talking about. And then, hey, look at what these guys were able to do to Arkansas. Look how crazy that crowd was. Look at this. Look at the success. And look really the whole historical context of what Arkansas basketball is. It wouldn't be it without A. Sutton.
Late 70s, really great in basketball. Early to mid 90s, really great in basketball. The point I would be making if I'm Eric Musselman is it's not happened once, but twice here. There's good, long, consistent runs. And the point would be Arkansas's overdue for another great run of success.
That's a great point.
Why don't you come here and let's make it the third big run to the Final Four as far as third era where you reach the Final Four. Arkansas's overdue for that. I mean, you look historically, that's what they've done. And you could be a part of it. That would be why I would bring up the historical context if I'm Musselman or his staff. As happened in the 70s, happened in the 90s. We're way overdue at Arkansas for this to happen again.
Because you have the original triplets, Ron Brewer, Sidney Moncrief, and Marvin Delph. And you have the secondary group, Todd Day, Lee Mayberry, Oliver Miller. If I'm Muss, and I was when obviously you got the four guys here, K.K. Robinson, Devontae Davis, Jalen Williams, and who am I forgetting? The other fantastic for them.
Did you say Jalen Williams? I didn't listen to your
Jalen, KK, and Moses. That was the other one. Forgetting the probably my favorite one of the group.
Yeah, the best one of the group, perhaps.
I mean, they've been labeled as this fantastic four. I mean, you would love to have a shrine in Bud Walton Arena in 10, 20 years, just like they have for those two guys. I mean, that's the whole. And
you didn't even mention Corliss and Scott. Yeah. I don't know who the third would be, but you know, maybe the best group of players are the ones that won the national title, played for it again the following year.
And so you want, like you're saying, you want to have that feeling that they're due, and you hope that Arkansas basketball is due. Let's go back to the phone lines. It's 877-377-6963 if you want to hop in on this conversation. Stanley is in Glenwood and wants to hop in. Stanley, you're on the Morning Rush.
Hey, yes, sir. Good morning to y'all. I remember back in the early 70s, late 69, and every Sunday morning, there would be a show on before college football started, and they would come out with the rankings. And for about 5 years, from about 67 to 72 in that area, Arkansas, I would get up on a Sunday morning and go and listen to Chris Schenkel, and he would break down the top 10 in college football, and Arkansas was always between 5 and 10 for that season. So Frank Broyles was a heck of a recruiter.
Yeah.
Yeah. But them were the good old days. If you remember back
then. It was
the
golden era. Yeah. I mean, you know, you look back at the best era of Razorback football and Razorback sports, it'd be hard to say the 60s. Weren't it. I mean, obviously you won a national title in football, could have won another one in 65. I mean, leading up to the 69 season. I mean, it was probably the next thing you'd put in there is 90 to 95 in basketball. Those were, the two of the best eras you've had in Arkansas sports history.
Yeah, and they had a nose guard back then. They called him nose guard, and I'll never forget the guy's name, and I don't know if he's still living or not, but his name was John Rattlehoover.
Good name.
Now there's your name for a defensive guy. But anyway, guys, have a good day.
Thank you, Stanley.
Appreciate the call. And I think another era that we need to mention Tommy, is the late 70s. College World Series appearance, Final Four, and then you had an Orange Bowl win over Oklahoma. Because we talked to Ron Calcagni about this former Arkansas quarterback a while. Cotton Bowl, Orange Bowl, and there's one other really
big win over Texas in 81.
Mm-hmm. So that era right around there. And
those other two had national titles involved.
Yeah. So to me, Tommy, I think if I had the choice to be a fan of any program and at a certain time or era, it's got to be Florida 2006. You win a national championship in football and basketball. Mm-hmm. That's just absurd to me. The amount of fun that you could have as a fan at the time would just be unbelievable. And like you mentioned, you had some really good eras out there.
Didn't UConn win it in men's and women's 1 year together?
Did. Yes, they did. That would either 2011 or 2014. I'm forgetting the year, but I mean, that's special. You have back-to-back nights of winning a national championship, and I don't
remember what Tennessee women's basketball did in 98, but I mean, women's basketball at UT was, Tennessee was big when their football was rolling big. So, there's a few schools you could point out. Arkansas has had some eras where baseball and, I mean, you look at the most recent football success in 10 and 11. I mean, baseball wasn't far away then,
Because they went to the College World Series in 2009
and 12.
Because it's like David Horn's kind of like Tom Izzo. Every four or so years, they end up in the College World Series, similar to when his Michigan State Spartans end up in the Final Four.
4, 9, 12, 15.
18, 19
were his. Yeah.
So that's pretty, I mean, that's a pretty high level of success, so it's cool.
I'm losing track of my years, here and not going back to 04, but here recently because we didn't play this year. It's kind of weird.
Messes you up a little bit. I was getting...
it's the lost season.
I don't think the word I'm looking for is retraction, but I was joking with my buddies the other day. I'm getting old because there was a name or a place on the tip of my tongue, and I just couldn't think of it. And
recall.
Recall. Yeah. And that just drives me insane because, obviously doing this job...
Recall the word recall.
Yeah. Doing this job, Tommy, you have to spit them out. If something hits your head, you got to remember it, and otherwise it's just... Yeah, so hopefully that's not a sign of things to come. We'll see, though.
You're too young for that.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a premium light lager brewed with real lemonade.
Now he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number 3, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
Tommy, my buddy Max, as I told you, he gave me a Texas logo, which he got at the NCAA tournament. That was a couple years ago in Nashville. There was a Texas cutout, and so he got it. And I was like, he's like, do you want this? And I said, yeah, absolutely. And the reason I grabbed the Longhorns is because now it's hanging up in my room with the horns are facing down. And I have a picture of my grandpa right next to it, my late grandpa, Daddy Joe, who did not like Texas. I have one of his buttons that says Beat Texas, and it has the crossed out Longhorn and stuff. And I know that Clay's talked about, he had a great conversation and a great story with Barry Switzer on Whole Hog talking about there just isn't seem to be a need for Oklahoma to play Arkansas. I would love, and I again, Texas thinks of Arkansas as its little brother or our little sister, maybe. I don't know.
Third cousin
when it comes to the Razorbacks. And for those who don't know, Texas Athletic Director Chris Elicante said earlier, it's like we want to play teams with like national championship aspirations. And there's just an arrogance and an ego. And
so you want to play some baseball every year.
Yeah, okay. That's but cool. For whatever reason, they don't want to face Arkansas on the football field. You do get them next year in Fayetteville because they pushed that game back. That was supposed to be played in, what, 2009? 2010, maybe?
I think it was even earlier than that. Maybe.
Okay, but so you do get them next year in Fayetteville, which you should be excited about.
No, you're right. It's right in there.
Right there.
Because they went down there and played. Anyway.
And you think about just the history of that rivalry, the Southwest Conference rivalry. I know the disdain for Texas and Arkansas fans because I do a radio show with Clay Henry Monday and Friday. I have my grandpa who told me stories. You've talked about it. But it's just, it's generational. Like,
right.
My generation and those younger than me don't have a hatred for the University of Texas. Now, there's some kids that grow up here, go to school here, whatever, that they have a lot of transplants from Texas. For those who don't know, Texas is like 60% Arkansas enrollment, something crazy.
What is it? They give them in-state rates?
It's like up to 90% or something.
Yeah, so I mean, it's affordable for a kid from Texas to come to school at Arkansas.
So there's a lot of like animosity. And my least favorite thing that someone would tell me in college, guys, is I came to Arkansas because I couldn't get into Texas. That lit a fire. that ticked me off more than like anything else I heard in college. And by the end of it, they may not have said that freshman year. By the end of it, they're like, I'm actually really glad I came here because Fayetteville's a fun time. But I think one of the reasons, like I'm thinking about this and I know my grandpa's up, is we need to get back. I feel bad for saying this. I want to get back to hating that school, and there just hadn't been. Now, you got them in the College World Series when you beat Clemens and those boys a couple years ago. That was fun. You got them in the early 2000s on the football field. You got clobbered by them in, what, 08 or 09, whenever it was. I think that might have been the year they went to the national
championship. 08, I believe it was.
That might have been the year Colton Company went to a national championship. Yeah. I'm not 100% on that. But
it was Tyler's freshman year. I remember that.
Yeah, so I guess 08, no, because 08, Florida beat Oklahoma, and 09 is when Texas lost to Alabama, okay. So it would have been that. Yeah, but that would be just, I mean, Tommy, that's one of those things, man, where you would just love to see that game again, whether it's Clay, whether it's you, whether it's so many others, to renew that Southwest Conference rivalry. The Texas A&M game is probably not going to happen in Dallas Cowboys Stadium from here on, from when the contract expires in 2024. If I'm Jerry Jones, if I'm Hunter Yurecek, I am doing everything in my power to schedule Texas in Dallas Cowboys Stadium. Now, do I think that's going to happen? No. Oh. Because Texas, again, looks at Arkansas in a way that's not a fun way. Now, I think poll Arkansas fans, poll the Arkansas Athletic Department, talk to Hunter, talk to Kevin Traynor, talk to whoever. They want to play that game.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's very similar in,
and I know you're going
different scale than Arkansas versus Arkansas
exactly.
State.
Yep.
What's in it for Texas to gain? A couple of reasons why this probably won't ever happen, and unless there's major conference realignment again,
they're so off
playing annuals because they play Oklahoma already off site in a neutral site game every year. And as we know, Arkansas has had its challenges with the A&M game and also playing down at War Memorial, leaving your home schedule a little bit light.
Mm-hmm.
And hey, if you want people to donate, give money to your program for not just tickets, but for a donation beyond that, you better reward them with great games in your stadium. And when you move another game out, and it's just been a generational tradition with Texas and Oklahoma playing in the old Cotton Bowl, fans have come to accept that it's not a long drive. They can make that work. They're not going to give up another game in Austin to play a game in Arlington,
yep,
or even play home and home every other year with Arkansas. They need the game just like Arkansas needs the game in their home stadium because you gotta satisfy your season ticket holders.
Maybe if Pittman gets this thing rolling, which I don't know if that's going to happen or not, maybe this conversation will be more relevant, and this will actually be a conversation, not necessarily in Cowboy Stadium, as you mentioned, because of the Cotton Bowl that they play with Oklahoma, but maybe, like, again, Chris Delaconte, the AD, was like, we want to play teams with national championship aspirations. Well, hey, news, Chris. Your team hasn't been really relevant, like, in the national
championship. Are you hoping to rub off on you?
Yeah, I was going to say, last time they were, again, I think it was in 2009 when they lost to Alabama, you had Colt McCoy get injured, and Garrett Gilbert, true freshman, had to come in and play. But, Tommy, correct me if I'm wrong, that's the last time, I guess, maybe 2 years ago, Sam Ellinger and company were close, but they beat Oklahoma that year, but they lost in the Big 12 championship game. I think that, I'm trying to like cycle through the years. I can't remember like a year that Texas was like really close, and I might be blanking on
really close to a title.
Yeah, really close to a title.
The Alabama game, because even the game where, you know, what was it, when Joe Tess famously said Texas football is back or what,
when they beat Notre Dame. I think, yeah, I have that, I mean, clip,
but,
on here.
I
love that clip.
Texas is back, folks.
I love, because they had Tyrell Swoops, one runs the end zone, they beat Notre Dame, and then they just sucked the rest of the season.
Right.
It was fantastic.
So, you know, for more than a decade, they've been trying to find their way.
Mm-hmm. And Tom Herman, I mean, we can talk about this. Herman's like, people thought he was going to do better recruiting. People thought that, I mean, he fits the Texas mold, y'all. He comes in, it's this brash, cocky, boisterous Texas head football coach. And, dude, they've come up short. I mean, think about, I'll give you the perfect example. This is the most Texas thing ever. Think about, they're beating Missouri, and Drew Lock does his, like, his celebration or whatever. For those who are watching the live stream, you know what I'm talking about. But, and then Herman, who's like head coach, just, you don't mock players. That you just don't do that. And he, after they threw, I think, I don't remember if Ellinger or someone ran in a touchdown, he starts doing that on the sidelines, and the rest of the players do it. Like, you have to, if you're going to be that level of arrogant or something, you have to have something to back up. Like, Nick Saban is arrogant to a certain extent, but you know why? Because he's got all those titles in his back pocket, Tommy. You're allowed to be that. Again, I'm not a huge fan of it. Anytime I brag or talk trash or something bad goes my way, I've just learned karma. Don't do that. But if you're going to do it, you better be able to back it up. Larry Bird, Reggie Miller, Michael Jordan, and others, it was okay for them to trash talk because they backed it up.
Yeah.
You got to be able to back it up. Texas has not backed up the stigma of being a blue blood in college football for, as you mentioned, over a decade.
Mm-hmm. But they sure act like that.
They sure act like
they're. Sure act like it.
It's not in the same echelon as A&M, Tommy, because A&M, for whatever reason, thinks they're the best in baseball, football, and basketball. But, like, you look at their national relevancy, especially when it comes to national titles, college World Series, Final Fours, there's, like, zip. There's, like, nothing. They're, like, they're worse, in a sense, than Texas, because Texas at least has some better history than A&M, but it's still not the same level. But maybe this isn't applicable to every Texas graduate or Texas fan. My little cousin goes to Texas. Now, little cousin who's on the same side as my grandpa would honestly be, he probably still is crushed in heaven right now that his little niece, am I saying that right? Grandpa, his granddaughter just decided to go to Texas instead of Arkansas. But I think with, like, it's not applicable to everyone there, because again, I have Texas friends and stuff, but it just, the nature of that school, whether you're a fan, whether you went to school there or whatever, it's one of the worst and most annoying in the country, because, like, even like Alabama, Tommy, backed it up with titles. Like, I'm trying to think, Vanderbilt baseball backed it up. I mean, there's certain programs and stuff you can look to. You can be, I hate it, but you can be arrogant because of this. But that's not one of those programs, I feel like.
Well,
right?
For decades, Texas was the gold standard in the Southwest Conference. We have always been I remember when state. We have always been a state that looks back, you know, to borrow a big word, harkens back to a time where things were better. And in the 60s, when it was Arkansas and Texas, and they were not just powers in the Southwest Conference, but powers in college football. Again, we talked earlier in the show about the golden era, playing Texas and reviving those memories, rekindling those thoughts, makes you feel better about where you used to be. But again, both programs are nowhere near the level of success, and Arkansas is further away from it than Texas. Let's just be honest. Arkansas is one of the bottom tier programs, not only in the Southeastern Conference, but in college football right now in the Power Five.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could make a case over the last 5 or 7 years, Arkansas has been as bad as any Power Five program in the country. I mean, they're in that short list. That's not where you want to be. Texas has a high standard. That's why they mull through coaches, you know, quickly, because they're always looking, you know, to get back to that brass ring of a national title. And they've just struggled to do it. Arkansas wants to play Texas because, A, you want to recruit the state of Texas. But, B, it brings in that nostalgic feeling you used to have. As good as it feels, I think it's going to be like it is now. A once or twice a decade deal, if that. You're going to play them every 5 years, maybe a home and home once a decade, maybe catch them in a bowl game like you did down in Houston. But I don't ever foresee, as long as A&M's in this league, as long as Texas is playing Oklahoma, there will be a time where you could have them on a regular basis on your football schedule.
Yeah, the point about Oklahoma, it's just hard to outdo that or anything.
It's a conference game, and again, that game is not going home and home, I don't think, anytime soon. That, you know, that's been something that's been going on, like the Georgia-Florida game, or you think about some of these rivalries that have played neutral sites. There's not many of them in college football. I don't see it's going to take something dramatic to change it.
And the thing about Texas fans is they might say, oh, we don't need to play Arkansas, whatever, but there is an animosity, there is an excitement when that game is played, whether it was in the College World Series. Now, I know there weren't a lot of people that went to Houston, but they played them in Houston in that classic this past baseball season, right? Right?
Yeah.
It's Houston.
Well, it seems like forever ago, doesn't it?
Texas, Oklahoma, and Baylor. I think those were the teams.
Yeah.
I think that was the round robin they played. I'm pretty sure that if I'm wrong, someone tell me. So
that
you got
feel right to me, but we'll just look it up.
Maybe I'm wrong on that. But so you did have them in the College World Series in 2018 where you beat them, and that was fun because Clemens was talking trash, and Blaine B. Knight said before the game, he was like, I'm going to come after him. And I like that mentality. I love that, especially since Clemens was one of the best hitters in the country. You beat him in the Texas Bowl in 2014, which I was down there in Houston. Let me tell you, that was a good old dandy time. You did lose to him on the basketball court in that heartbreaker. I'm forgetting, you played on the military base. I can't think of, I guess it was 2 years.
Down at El Paso.
Yeah, El Paso. But you did beat him when they had A.J. Abrams, not D.J. Augustine, but you had Damian James was on the team. They had a pretty good squad back in the day. So regardless of what Texas fans tell you, that game means something to them. I thought they played Texas. I couldn't remember 100%.
It seems like 100 years ago when you played on February 29th of this year.
So, but that's
lost to them 8-7.
Yeah, that's one of those things where regardless of what Texas fans tell you, the Texas athletic director tell you, the Texas players tell you, there is still bad blood between Texas fans and Razorback fans. So you have old Texas fans, maybe. And maybe I'm miscategorizing it because I'm not there in Austin doing sports radio every day, but maybe there is a faction or a bigger group of Texas fans that would like to play Arkansas. Maybe not the Arkansas football team is in its current state, but if Arkansas, like think about how fun the games would have been in 2010 and 2011 if you had Arkansas facing off against Texas. Now, they got the better of you, I think we said, 2 years before, but that was the first year of Bobby Petrino, so that they weren't ready for that game. But now you'd get an opportunity, Tommy, and I'm talking about in 2010, 2011, to play them when they're at your heyday, and that would be fun. I mean, think about the atmosphere of that type of game, whether you're faced off with them in a bowl game or you faced off with them in a regular season, neutral site, home game or whatever. I mean, that would have been spectacular. Now, pretty much every year since then, you would have gotten probably clobbered. I mean, you did beat them in 2014, but I mean, really, the last 3 years, she would not have wanted to play at the University of Texas. But hopefully, Arkansas can get Pat back to a point where the Texas arrogance can't breach not wanting to play Arkansas.
Well,
you know what I mean?
And let me tell you, it's good for Arkansas football for Texas to be good. Now, follow me on this. When Texas Longhorn football is down, who picks up the slack in recruiting? It's teams like A&M and teams like LSU and others, Oklahoma State, that come in. Baylor's been a team. TCU's been another program on the rise as Texas has fallen. But it doesn't help Arkansas at all when LSU and A&M are able to get some of the top four stars and maybe even a five-star athlete out of Texas that would maybe have traditionally gone to Austin, to UT, if they were the same power they'd once been. If Texas is good and not playing in your conference, maybe they're getting some kids. You're not going to get them, but neither is A&M and neither is LSU, who are in your league.
Did that sound weird coming off your tongue that you sometimes wish Texas was good? And it's always the phrase, Tommy.
Same from a recruiting standpoint.
Basically what you're laying out is the enemy of the enemy is my friend.
Right.
Which in this case, Texas.
I'm just trying to apply logic to it.
Yeah, exactly. Texas.
Which logic and college football don't always intersect.
Yeah, like in this case, Texas is your enemy, A&M, LSU are your enemies, but you don't play Texas, who would rather them be good, take up those recruits and stuff, than not. Like, I'm going to pull up the 24/7 recruiting rankings real quick, but like, it was weird because I thought Tom Herman would just kill it recruiting. I thought he'd have a top five recruiting class and stuff, but that hasn't necessarily been the case. And again, he's in hot water right now at Texas. Like, if they don't have a good year, like, you remember when not only did you hear Texas is back from Joe Test, the sound clip we just paid, but you had Sam Ellinger, who's back for his senior year, get up on stage after they beat Georgia in the Sugar Bowl and say, "We're back." And then they had this past season where they didn't do jack.
Couldn't follow it up.
Like, right now, they have the 10th best recruiting class in the country, which you would kill for as an Arkansas fan. But in Texas's case, that's not good enough for their fan base. They want top five, top three, or whatever. So on the note of, like, Ellinger saying we're back, they're, like, again, they're certainly not back. They have not backed up that we're back claim that they've made, fans, players, whoever. It hasn't been the case.
And one of the issues they've had is Oklahoma. Obviously, Bob Stoops for years got the program to the brink, but generally came up short other than the one national title, but was consistently better than Texas. You thought, well, maybe once Stoops is gone, Oklahoma will fall off. Well, they've just gotten better since Stoops is gone.
Lincoln Riley's done
fantastic. And that's not been good for Texas football either.
And when you think about Texas, it's typically a lot of really good quarterbacks in Texas. And when they see what Lincoln Riley has done, Baker Mayfield, Heisman Trophy winner. Kyler Murray, Heisman Trophy winner. Jalen Hurts, Heisman Trophy finalist. Spencer Rattler, who's their quarterback now, number one dual threat and number one quarterback in the country in the 2019 class, I believe. I mean, that's the repertoire that he says. He has a better recruiting pitch, Lincoln Riley, than any other coach as far as quarterbacks go in college football. There's not a single one that can stack up to him. Two Heisman Trophy winners, one Heisman Trophy finalist. Like, you can't outdo that. Now, I don't know his recruiting pitch.
And Jalen Hurts.
Yeah, like that's unbelievable. So I don't know if, as far as his recruiting, the other stuff goes, but like you're talking about.
Is it recruiting high school kids or is it recruiting the transfer kid? Because anymore, it's recruiting the transfer quarterback that probably matters most. If I'm a head coach, I'm trying to figure out how to accomplish that in the transfer portal, because you look at who's had the success. There's been more instances of transfer quarterbacks coming in and making a bigger difference than the guy you've developed and groomed all the way that relationship back to their sophomore year.
And this is the question, and my buddy Evan Gentry, who's a huge Oklahoma fan, doesn't want this question asked, but when you look at Baker Mayfield coming over from Texas Tech, Kyler coming over from A&M, and then Jalen coming over from Alabama, three great quarterbacks, but what do they all have in common? As you mentioned, transfers.
Right.
How is Oklahoma going to do this year with a former true freshman, now true sophomore quarterback? I don't think Rattler redshirted. Maybe he did. In Spencer Rattler, how is that going to play out? How is that going to work? Is Lincoln going to be able to have the same type of success with these guys, with Spencer Rattler as a high school kid now going into his sophomore? I can't remember if he's a redshirt or true, but that's kind of a similar question that you ask. We were talking about recruiting earlier with Eric Musselman. Muss has had success with a lot of transfers and stuff. There's really not a lot of high school basketball talent in Reno or in that part of where he's coaching. Now, there is out in Cali and stuff, but a lot of his success, the track record, has been transfer kids and older kids. How does that work out in his first year? You got four true freshmen. You got 10 guys who have never played in an Arkansas uniform before on the college basketball side of things. I mean, we can look at Oklahoma with Rattler and Lincoln Riley, what Arkansas does. The dynamic that you're talking about is important because it's one thing to have success with transfers. It's another thing and a completely different thing when you have success with high school kids. So I'm really curious to see how that dynamic plays out with Arkansas basketball and then really with Oklahoma and Spencer Rattler out there.
We always think about high school recruiting and putting a ranking number next to those classes. All I'm saying is when it comes to quarterbacks, the transfer portal has been really over the last few years, more important for a lot of schools than developing one from ground up.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly right. It's going to be very interesting to see how does that translate. We've heard Musk talk about they're going to have to factor in if they have a one-time transfer rule, how they recruit, how they go about that. I mean, that's something that Sam Pittman will pay attention to, Dave Van Horn as well. It's going to change the dynamic of all college sports. It's very interesting to see transfers are already very prevalent as far as college sports go.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a light and flavorful beer for those easy drinking occasions.
The crowd's into it. They just threw him out of the game. He's gotten his second technical, and he's been thrown out of the ballgame.
So I had some recruiting news over the weekend, so I text Richard late last night. It was really kind of him to come on this morning. We missed him last week, and just kind of wanted to touch base with him this morning as we got some news over the weekend. Before we do that, Richard, did you have a good fourth, man? What'd you end up doing this weekend?
I pretty much laid low and just enjoyed staying around the house and doing a little yard work.
That doesn't sound enjoyable to me, being out in the heat, pulling weeds out of flower beds. But to each their own.
It was enjoyable afterwards, though. Yeah, get it over with.
And get it done.
I was going to say, because I equate yard work to like working out is you hate while you're doing it, but it always you're happy with the results, especially like if it looks really good after, if you did a good job.
Yeah.
Like while you're doing it, you're like, I hate this because it's hot, it's musty, it's steamy. But then you look after, it's like, I'm glad I did that.
Yeah.
So, well, Richard.
Kind of like a proud papa.
Yeah. So got some good news over the weekend and then got some bad news as far as the recruiting stuff is concerned. Let's start with the bad news. And this is like Landon Rogers out of Little Rock, Parkview quarterback. People are speculating if he's going to play that the next level. He decided to decommit on over the weekend. Just kind of your thoughts in talking with him and just kind of what happened there as far as that goes, man.
I hadn't been able to get a hold of him. Hearing a lot of different things, nothing really, really solid. I know some people think, well, it's because of Lucas Coley, you know, committing to Arkansas back, you know, not too long ago. And now I'm pretty confident in saying that I didn't have anything to do with it. As far as when Coley committed, there wasn't any alarm or anything like that. I mean, usually in that type of situation, coaches keep kids like that informed and say, hey, we're going to sign three guys at your position. So, and here's a couple of guys that we think we may be able to get. So that would have been no surprise. And I was told again that wasn't an issue, but you know, obviously he opened things up. I think it was somewhat of a surprise to some people from some of the people that I talked to. So, but you know, yeah, hey, you just you try to recruit him back and see what happens. Usually, when a guy reopens, they don't come back. But it has happened, but doesn't happen that often.
Richard, do you think he plays quarterback in the next level? 6'5", big kid. I've gotten a chance to watch him play a little bit, but there's kind of speculation out there that he'd be more of like a tight end or maybe wider. What position do you think he plays at the college level?
Well, you know, he's got an elite arm, and when I say elite, it's Ryan Mallett or maybe even better, and I don't say that lightly. I've seen Landon play several times, and the problem with him is his accuracy. One throw, it'd be right on the money, and the other one, you know, if it's say a slant pattern or something, it could be 5 yards behind the receiver. He is a project in that regard, but talent wise, is arm wise, he's as good as there is. As far as maybe playing another position, obviously, when you're 6'5", about 215 pounds, and you're a good athlete, he's not a great athlete, but he's a good athlete. You know, speculation could enter your mind if things don't work out at quarterback that he could move to tight end. I could see that, but at the same time, he's always played quarterback, and he's got that mentality. Could he flip the switch and you know, put his hand in the dirt and have to block somebody? That remains to be seen. He's got the capability. I mean, he's very, very strong. His weight room numbers are pretty crazy for a quarterback, especially his size and those long arms. His bench press is well over 300 pounds.
Yeah. I just think about the timing at quarterback. I mean, you got Felipe Franks, who's a senior this year. Then you look, and I guess the next guy kind of in line right now is KJ Jefferson, who's a redshirt freshman. Then you got Hornsby. You got Coley coming in, as you mentioned. You still got John Stephen Jones and Jack Lindsay, who will be a senior this year, so he won't be there the following year. I don't think I'm missing anybody there, but you just think about it. All these things have to time out, and if you got three or four guys kind of bunched up in a class or two apart from each other, that has to factor not into just Landon Rogers' decision, but any other quarterback they're recruiting right now.
It could, but at the same time, most you know, there may be some exceptions because of turnover and guys leaving, but most of the time, most programs have, about three or four guys already on campus, and you're going to face that usually anywhere else you go for the most part, unless, like I said, you know, some guys have left and their numbers are pretty low. That could be a possibility, but wherever you go, you're going to have competition.
I'm just saying a lot of guys going to be in freshman and sophomore years. How many quarterbacks do you think this coaching staff will look to sign on a routine year? Will it be one? Will it be two? What do you think their philosophy is going to be at that position?
Well, I mean, I tend to think they're trying to get the numbers back up. Obviously, like you said, the numbers are the guys go, you know, sign, say in December, the numbers would definitely, for young quarterbacks, would definitely be maybe a little higher than normal. But I tend to think they'll probably go back to signing one the next year and going forward, unless, you know, obviously you have some turnover and have unexpected injuries and force a guy to have to give up the game of football or something like that.
Richard Davenport with us here on the Morning Rush. Richard, Arkansas, we've talked about kind of the Landon Rogers stuff. They did get some good news over the weekend with Christopher Paul, linebacker out of Georgia, committing. Just kind of your thoughts on this kid.
Well, a physical kid who would play the Mike linebacker position, 6'1", 235. Tommy ran a 4.71 in the 100-yard dash out of Georgia. Had offers from Tennessee, Louisville, Nebraska, TCU, Michigan State. More than 20 offers total. And a very physical kid who's a leader of his team the past 2 years. Team captain, which is pretty unusual, you know, for a sophomore and a junior. But after talking to him, you can understand why. Physical kid who loves to hit and has a mentality that you want at the Mike linebacker position. And, you know, he had a previous relationship with Coach Pittman and several other members of the staff and just was really waiting on the Arkansas offer. You know, sometimes you hear guys say, man, I was really waiting on this offer. And, you know, you go, okay, and then they don't end up at Arkansas or anything like that. But within a week, he got the offer, and within a week he committed to Arkansas. So he really, truly, really is an admirer of Coach Pittman and members of the staff and Coach Rhodes and just really just a kid who I think has a bright, bright future because he's such a high character kid. And one thing that really kind of told me of his somewhat of his character, he works at Chick-fil-A, man. Their recruiting, their hiring process is very, very thorough. So you get hired on at Chick-fil-A, you're probably a good kid.
Did he tell you my pleasure after you talked with him a little bit? So I feel like that's it's ingrained in his head. Yeah. Richard, I'm looking at the class rankings right now on 24/7, just kind of comparing to last year. They got him 35th overall nationally, 9th in the SEC. At this point in the recruiting tenure, Richard, where is this class stacking up to the class that they just brought in 2020?
I would say right now it's probably about on par, but they finished pretty strong for the 20 class. How well do they finish as far as this class? I guess we'll obviously find out. They're on some pretty good guys, but they got to finish strong. Looks like they're going to sign anywhere from 23 to 25, and I say 23 to 25 because the numbers always kind of fluctuate regardless of what the intentions are. As far as a solid number, they may say 20, and it usually ends up, 23-25. But they're halfway there, and it all depends on how they finish up this class.
Richard, have you talked to any of the high school coaches around the state? I know they've had conditioning and some workouts the last couple of weeks. Have you gotten any feedback from kind of this initial restart or this slow restart high school football's having in Arkansas, at least with coaches being around their kids in the last couple of weeks?
They're loving the mask. I'm just kidding. Can you imagine being out there wearing a mask, well, being a coach?
I've seen the coaches out in you're right. I've been to the one place where they were working out, and the coaches are doing it. Of course, the players, as they're running 100-yard sprints, they're not wearing the mask. So
no. But most of the guys that I talked to, they're just glad to get back out there and be around the kids, because obviously they've been separated from them for so long. And I guess they start back up today after the break. And they're happy to be back with them, getting them back into shape and football shape, and being able to at least talk to them in person instead of just over the phone.
What's your feel for the sentiment right now around Arkansas with high school coaches? Is the season going to go off as scheduled? Are we going to see a delay? What do you think high school football, in your opinion, what's the future of it here in the rest of 2020?
I don't know if there's a lot of optimism, to be honest with you. People that I talk to, some think, if we have a season, you hear that quite a bit when you're talking to high school coaches, if we have a season. I do know that, and I noticed a while back, that Texas is talking about having their football season flip-flopped in the spring of the fall sports to the spring and the spring sports to the fall. I don't know if Arkansas has even thought about that. From what I kind of gathered, I don't think that's even been discussed. If it has, no one's shared it with me. I think that may be something that they probably might need to look at, just because of the, what's going on with the increased cases and the possibility. There's talk of a vaccine at the end of the year or the first of the year. I mean, the possibility of playing in the spring sounds maybe a little bit more doable than maybe it does this fall.
And you got golf, which is obviously an outdoor sport, and still a lot of people are recreationally enjoying golf. Volleyball is another sport that we don't talk a lot about, but obviously I think it's gained a lot of traction over the last 10 years or so in our state, in addition to football. So it's not just football flipping to spring. It would perhaps be some of the other sports we don't talk a lot about that would move schedules as well.
Yeah, well, I think it's something to look at. I think you got to have everything. I think you got to have everything on the table as far as the possibilities of trying to get your season in, and it would be really disappointing if all that they have, on the agenda is, hey, we're either playing this fall or we're not. That would be kind of disappointing, obviously, for the kids and the players. And let's face it, there's a lot of, and we talked about this quite some time, and it's a daily occurrence with me when I'm talking to kids, as far as seniors in the 2021 class. They obviously haven't been able to go to camps and college camps and be seen. And a lot of them are concerned about, being noticed by college coaches. And without a season, that would be just devastating to a lot of them.
Yeah, and the dead period's what, through the end of August now? And if you flip the seasons, you'd have to make some adjustments to signing days, wouldn't you, to align with some of these changes? Of course, national policy versus what they might do in Arkansas. But you're talking about maybe some kids not even getting to play before the next signing day.
Yeah, I would think that they would probably have an early signing period and then maybe have one later during the spring, like April 15th or something like that, that they usually have for basketball. That's just, speculation on my part, obviously. But I think you would go ahead and try to get the guys that already know where they want to go and they're already committed, get them signed in December or February or whatever, they come up with, and then have one later in the spring.
Richard, let me top off the interview with this, man. Last time we were talking about exciting wide receiver quarterback combos that we're looking forward to this upcoming season. Tommy said Treylon Burks, I said Trey Knox, and both of those coupled with Felipe Franks. is there a dynamic duo? Is there a combination that you're really excited to see this upcoming football season with a quarterback and wide receiver on the Razorbacks?
I'll just be like what was just mentioned. I tend to think Burks and Franks. I think everybody looks at that combo and gets excited. And I think let's face it, the last 2 years, Arkansas's quarterback position has been very, very inconsistent. And if you would have had more consistent play at quarterback, you probably would have maybe won a few more games. Yep. But that obviously wasn't the case. But yeah, I would probably go with that combo.
Richard Davenport of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, kind enough to join us again this week. Missed out on him last week, got him this week. Richard, we'll talk to you on Thursday, man, on Recruiting Thursday.
All right, guys. Sounds good.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
We the best.
This is the worst.
It's time for the best and worst of the weekend.
I'm going to let you kick this one off, Tommy. And you did not go to the river this weekend.
No, that's on my worst list for the weekend. I did go fishing this weekend. Me and my buddy Mike got out on the Arkansas River, did a little bass fishing on Friday morning. It's a lot different. I hadn't bass fished in 25 years.
Really?
I've been pretty much a river trout fisherman below dams for the last 10 or 15 years. And so I got to do that. That was pretty cool. Went out Friday morning, got up earlier than... Yeah, that's the thing with you want to get out there where the water's cool and you want to be out there at daybreak. Mm-hmm. So it was a earlier start Friday morning than what we normally have for the show. So that was one of my best of the weekend. Caught a couple nice bass. That was fun and something different and new. Saturday morning I got up. Now this is the time of the year, and you know my love and affinity for fresh garden tomatoes.
Tomatoes.
Have not found anybody yet that wants to pawn any off on me yet. I am available. Got a garden full of tomatoes you want to get rid of them, I'm your man.
I thought Tom was going to give you some.
Well, I hadn't seen Tom, but I'm put me on your list. So I went to the farmer's market Saturday morning, found some, first time I'd ever been to a farmer's market.
Okay.
That was kind of a different experience walking around there and saw some neat stuff, but got me some fresh garden tomatoes. I had plans of, it's 4th of July. So, you know, Saturday, you got to do what do you got to have on 4th of July? Pizza's not the answer. You got to have a grilled burger and you got to have some hot dogs, right? So I knew I was going to have hamburgers on the grill. So we had to have some fresh tomatoes. And yesterday, there's nothing better this time than fresh tomatoes and just a bacon tomato sandwich. That was my lunch yesterday. So those are my best of the weekend. Watched the Eagles last night. I'm not a huge Eagles fan, but that was a fun concert to watch. Mm-hmm. James Taylor had an online concert. Zach Brown's. I watched a few online concerts this weekend. So didn't get out and do a lot, but those were some of my best points of the weekend.
So my weekend was spent at Nashville and at Percy Priest Lake. For those who are the Morgan Wallen fans out there, and his song "Cover Me Up," he talks about that. I've been out there once. It was a great time. Got to give a shout out to my buddy Jack Talapik, who he was at Beaver this weekend, and so he let me stay in his room this weekend. Also Lawson Jones for showing me up there, and then for Addie, Abby, and Madison for showing us a good time this weekend. We had a great time. And it was funny because there a couple of them are from the Fort Smith area, mm-hmm. and they were just kind of joking with me a little bit. They're like, "So why did you move from Nashville to Fort Smith?" And mm-hmm. I said, "It's my job. I love this job and stuff." And for those who don't know, I did part time radio in Nashville for a little bit right out of college, and I came here. And at the time. It was a really easy answer. Like, I think you and I have had this conversation. I would have crawled over broken glass to get this job. I mean,
thank you, Eddie.
The Morning Rush program, and it's been like a staple of this state in sports talk radio for quite some time. It's got really good branding, really good stuff. So at the time, it was kind of a no-brainer for me to take this job. I prayed about it, talked with my dad about it, and I knew I was going to do it. And then as we got closer and we inched towards me leaving and stuff, a bunch of my buddies threw me a going-away party. And there was like a slideshow and stuff, a bunch of old pictures, some that I hope never see the light of day. And I was just really sad that night because I had built up a great group of friends in Nashville. Like, there's a bunch of Arkansas kids that moved over there, still come see them from time to time, like this weekend. And it was hard for me. And I realized I'm driving back home yesterday. It's a 7.5 hour drive from Nashville to the Fork. And I realized that that's probably the most difficult decision I've ever had to make in my entire life. Now, at the time, it seemed easy. full-time job, benefits, everything included, because I was working part-time and I was waiting tables at Outback, and it was just like easy and stuff. But I realized because of everything that happened, it was really difficult. You were talking about how Jenkins didn't know anyone moving here from BB or whatever. Well, I'm from Little Rock, and I moved here. The only person I knew was John. That was it. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember, so Nick Mason, kind of the chronological timeline of this, Nick Mason called me, I think in March of 2018, asked that I would be interested because he was thinking about leaving. A couple months later, he reached
back
out.
You knew before I did, then.
Yeah. And then John ended up, John was really the main reason I got this job because he had to convince Tommy to hire me. But the timeline.
That was a long process,
yeah,
too.
The timeline or whatever worked out on that. But I'm driving back and I'm just thinking to myself, like, there's times I really do miss Nashville because great friend group. If you're a single male there, there's a lot of food to eat, a lot of places to drink, a lot of cute girls around. But I was just thinking about, like, what my life would look like right now as far as my job goes, because I know, unfortunately, the coronavirus has hurt the job industry, not just across sports, but a number of different ways. And the food industry, it's just really tough. It was really tough at a certain point. It still is because of just everything going on. So I'm driving back, and I'm just thinking to myself, I'm so thankful that you ended up hiring me for this position. So 2 years were coming up on when I was hired here at Pearson Broadcasting. Not get too sentimental for a sec, but I'm just really appreciative of you giving me this opportunity. I know that you have a fire burning in you for this job, just like I do. And obviously we're going through trench warfare right now without sports. So having to do that, since we fired Jenkins, I think he's done a really good job. He's busted his tail. He stepped out for a sec because he's working on some production stuff, but he's done a really good job. Clay's been really a mentor for me since I started working in sports media. Now, he's not on with us today, but I just want to make sure everyone knows that even though sometimes we disagree on stuff on air, I know how important he is, and I love that guy. I'm just really appreciative of that. And then just everyone here at Pearson Broadcasting, there's Betty, Jamie, Lance, Rita, On, Jeff, Clifty, like everyone here, Jim, like everyone that works for us and does stuff with us. I'm just happy to be here. So I made it through. Thought I might do something, tear up for a sec, but I had a lot to talk.
Two years when?
So I think I was hired. I moved here July 21st. I know I signed the contract sometime in July, so it's coming up. Congrats on making one of the best decisions of your life, by the way, as well. But
always humble, folks. Yeah, he's always humble.
I'm just really appreciative and thankful. I had a lot to think about on the way home, and that was definitely one of the conversations.
Windshield time's good sometimes when you have one of those lengthy drives. When I'm coming back from the river, you can mull a lot of things over. So windshield time's good for a man,
yeah,
you know?
And I was being in Nashville this weekend, country's obviously really big over there, and there's a couple Morgan Wallen songs that I really got hooked on. So I was daydreaming, thinking about this, and Morgan Wallen, that was my car ride home. So, but again, and I guess the other people need to be mentioned, obviously our listeners that make this show possible. I mentioned that John, was the only person I knew in Fort Smith, Tommy, at the time. He introduced me to Jeff Taylor, the Smith family, Drake, Mrs. Beth, Callaway's, the Blues, all the friends that I've made up here. There's Southern hospitality, and then there's Arkansas Southern hospitality. Because I'm not kidding, I did not know a soul originally in Fort Smith, and luckily I've made it up, because it was tough originally moving from a place where I had a great friend group and then moving here where I didn't really know anyone. But luckily this community and just Arkansas itself is kind of taking me back into its wings. So that's the one sentimental segment that you'll get from me from this year.
So was that your best or your worst of the weekend?
That was my best.
Oh, that was your best.
Sure.
Okay, so, just double checking.
I guess my worst would be waking up. I go to bed. I'm in bed. I try to be in bed by 9 o'clock every night before the show, Tommy. And obviously on weekends when we're not doing the show, I tend to stay out a little late because I'm a youngin' and we can do that. But for whatever reason, my biological clock in my head will not let me sleep in. I woke up on Saturday at 5:30 and could not fall back asleep. Finally at 6, I was just like, I'm done. And so I throw on my shoes and I ran and just jogged a little bit around my buddy's apartment in downtown Nashville.
Energy.
Yeah, it was peaceful. It was really quiet in the morning. No one was out. I guess it turned into something good, but I guess just the the inability to sleep in on weekends is really aggravating.
That's, yeah, when you go from getting up at 4-something a.m., then on the weekends you'd like to sleep into like 6:30. It gets a little more difficult.
It's a little more annoying, yeah. But that was really the only bad part of the weekend on that.
Yeah. I guess my worst part of the weekend, Warriors Charge, a horse that I got a connection to, and a horse that's done very well at Oaklawn, a four-year-old, lost in the Met Mile this weekend, so that was as a bad deal. Didn't get the fish on the Norfolk River, and no fireworks this weekend. I mean, I think my neighbors did enough fireworks in our neighborhood. It sounded like a bunch going off, but normally we go to a fireworks show and watch, you know, a production of fireworks. Didn't get to see any fireworks this weekend on a big scale, so had to watch it on TV.
Yeah, so usually downtown Nashville, for those who've ever been, they put on this incredible fireworks display for like the whole community, really close to Titan Stadium, Nissan Stadium out there, and it's just this fantastic display. And if you go, typically like Broadway, like the bars were closed this weekend, and they're shut down for I think 14 days is what it said. But if you go, there's so many rooftop bars, and you're right on the riverfront. That's it's incredible view. But that didn't occur this weekend. We did shoot off some really, me and Lawson bought a couple couple sparklers and stuff, but we really didn't shoot off a lot of fireworks.
Sparklers?
So, yeah.
Sparklers?
there were girls there, so like it's like a cliche, like sparkler stuff. So, I had a really good weekend. It's always good to get back. I'm a little jealous they're going out on the boat during Labor Day, but we'll do our first show of football.
I'm hoping we're doing a show about football on Labor Day.
I think that's going to... I told him, I was like, if football gets pushed back a little bit, count me in. Otherwise, y'all have fun. I will be down here for that. So, it was a good 4th of July weekend. A little different, obviously, but it was fun nevertheless.
Well, hopefully sports are on our horizon. I mean, we're hoping baseball and the NBA, and that's kind of going to be the first big testing grounds to see if they can get their seasons off. Mm-hmm. Towards the end of this month, and they can sustain them. So at least we're a couple of weeks away from something happening in that's real live sporting events that's somewhat normal again.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer, 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.